Hi everyone, Pamela Larg here, your host of the Energy Transitions podcast. If you enjoy listening to our bi-weekly podcast, make sure to hit the subscribe button and take a moment to leave a rating or review wherever you're listening. This will help us spread the message and connect with our community. Thanks again for listening to the Energy Transitions podcast from Enlit and Friends. Bioenergy with carbon capture and storage, or BECCS, holds great potential to decarbonize power generation. However, these kinds of projects are associated with unproven technology, high costs, and criticism around the sustainable sourcing of fuel. One company making gains in the field of BECCS and using it as a cornerstone for decarbonization is Drax. To learn more, I'm joined by Anne Burton, Head of Global BECCS Deployment at Drax. We explore the progress of their project in North Yorkshire, which currently hosts four 600 megawatt biomass units. The UK government recently gave planning consent for the conversion of two biomass units to incorporate carbon removals technology. We discuss overcoming challenges associated with these projects, the skills needed to spur development, and how Drax is strategically positioning themselves in the US market, maximizing local policy frameworks and the growing demand for BECCS-derived carbon credits. I'm your host, Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Anne, how wonderful to be speaking to you today about Drax's decarbonization journey, which is really quite a story to tell. And of course, we will be focusing on BECCS, which is bioenergy with carbon capture and storage. But let's just start off by talking about Drax. Talk to me, and this is going to be quite a substantial and chunky question, but I want to know what is the story behind Drax's decarbonization?
Thank you. And thank you for having me today. So for those of you who don't know Drax, we are a UK power facility. We were built in the 1970s to run on coal. It's a very large facility within the UK. And over the time since it was constructed, views on climate change and decarbonisation have evolved. And as a business, we've looked to kind of move with the times and with the science. And in the last kind of 20 years or so, we've had a real focus on how we could actually decarbonise our coal-fired power plant within the UK. It's a substantial operation, and it's taken, as I say, decades to make this happen. We've done a lot of work to look at what you could do to convert a coal-fired power station and all the carbon that is emitted from it and have a solution that is better for the environment. As many of you will probably know, that journey took us on a route to biomass, which is essentially white wood pellets. They're a fantastic alternative when looking at coal-fired power stations and a way to decarbonize. They are the same kind of chemistry and also the same format. So you can take a pellet and you can grind it down, and it can be used within the same boiler that you would use for a coal-fired power station. Drax was one of the first to do this piece of technology in terms of converting a coal-fired power plant. We did a lot of research into biomass and establishing the supply chains that go with biomass. And as a result, and the work that we've done within the UK, we've become one of the largest carbon emitters, and we've then decarbonised to become one of the largest decarbonisation projects within Europe. We've now got four units. Each unit is over 600 megawatts running on renewable biomass here today in the UK, which supplies about 10% of the UK's electricity. Now, the majority of that biomass is currently sourced from outside of the UK, predominantly from the US South, where we are able to source sustainable biomass that we then convert into white wood pellets and bring to the facility. We store them in some very iconic looking domes because it is a much more challenging material to use than coal. And then we burn it within the same coal-fired boilers that we used in the original design of the power plant. This means that we've reduced our carbon footprint exponentially from where it was when we first built the facility. And what we've done today now is we're starting to actually go on the next stage of that journey of decarbonisation. So what we have done at the power plant for probably the last 5 or 6 years is started to look at carbon capture equipment. Whilst we use the carbon cycle of the tree at the moment and the trees absorb carbon, that produces biomass. When we burn the biomass at the power station at the moment, the CO2 is then re-released into the atmosphere to then be recaptured by the next generation of forestry. What we're hoping to do with our carbon capture equipment is actually take that CO2 that's currently emitted from the power station and permanently store it underground in geological formations, therefore removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and becoming a carbon negative process. We've still done kind of quite a lot of work at the pilot plant that we have here in the UK, and now we've got good confidence that we understand how you can apply that carbon capture technology to a biomass power plant.
So you talk about the pilot project that's based in North Yorkshire at the Drax power plant. So obviously you've been given the green light by government. So you can really just go for it and see how far you can get with this project.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So we've built this pilot facility at our North Yorkshire power plant, and it's been running using a number of different carbon capture technologies to understand which one works best with the biomass. As you say, we've now kind of had a green light to get going on this on a larger scale. So now we're working with the UK government to begin that journey of converting the first unit at Drax, which would be 600 megawatts of power, which would produce over 2 million tonnes of CO2 that we would capture in the ground. So the UK project is currently underway, and we're working with the UK government to understand the timeline for deploying that technology. But what we're also doing at the same time, which I'm heavily involved in, is taking all this skills and expertise that we've built at the UK power plant with both power generation using biomass and carbon capture. And we're looking for new opportunities outside of the UK where we can essentially deploy this technology in other jurisdictions.
And before we start talking about those other jurisdictions, you mentioned some of the skills needed for these kinds of projects. And perhaps we can delve into that a little bit more, because we need a certain amount of skills to support our energy transition. So specifically from decarbonisation with BECCS, what kind of skills shortages are you experiencing, or would you say that we have the skills needed for these projects?
So when it comes to skills in the UK and developing BECCS, there are a number of different areas that we've looked to develop in recent years. We started on that with regards to the conversion from coal to biomass. We used a number of our existing employees, and we've retrained them from their coal expertise into biomass expertise. And I would say the key areas there that we worked on with colleagues is developing, understanding the material handling of biomass. You have to be extremely careful when handling biomass. It's highly combustible. It's very susceptible to weather changes, etc. So understanding how to handle that safely, because it is quite different from coal, is a skill set that we have developed. And then secondly, when you put biomass into the boiler, understanding how it behaves versus how coal behaved previously has been another key area, which obviously focuses on chemistry, engineering, etc. So we've worked quite hard in that space, developing expertise through apprenticeships, etc., on that side of things. And I think it's probably worth noting on that point, whilst we talk about white wood as being the predominant fuel stock that we have in our UK facility, we have done a lot of research into alternative fuels as well that we can use to supplement the white wood that we have in there. As you'll know, there's lots of agricultural residues from straws to other kind of industry woods that are coming out of orchards, etc., that we might be able to use. However, the key to making that successful is the chemistry behind it. So we've spent a lot of time looking at how different materials behave when alongside white wood within a boiler. So that's the kind of power side of the equation with regards to the type of skills that we need. When we then switch to the carbon capture side, it's again very much a chemistry focused activity. We are seeing that we're actually attracting talent from the oil and gas sector into this, because not only are you capturing the carbon dioxide through a chemical process, we're then looking to transport it and store it permanently underground, which requires quite a lot of knowledge with regards to geology, how different gases behave underground, how you can permanently sequester them, and understanding the activities that go on once you put CO2 into the ground. So again, that's another area that I'm seeing that we're expanding our kind of talent pool and looking for people in terms of apprenticeships.
I would like to ask you a question about the sustainability side of things. So in preparation for this podcast, I did quite a bit of reading. And of course, there's always naysayers and critics who say, look, are you sourcing these whitewood pellets sustainably, or whatever fuel or feedstock you're using? So I'd be keen to understand from a Drax perspective, how are you going about ensuring the sustainability of these projects?
So this is a question that we get asked on a regular basis, as you can appreciate. Having sustainable biomass in this process is our license to operate. We need to ensure that the forests that we are taking our fuel from are actually growing, are healthy, and are there for the long term to ensure that we can continue to supply the power stations that we're building and the ones that we already have in operation. In order to do that, we have a large team here that are focused purely on the sustainability piece of BECCS and of biomass generation. It starts with looking for the right areas to source your biomass from. You'll see from the work that we've already done, a large proportion of our biomass comes from the US South. Now, if you look at that area, they have a number of very active fibre baskets. Because of the climate that they have there, trees grow particularly quickly. And it is understood as an actual timber basket that is used for many different industries. So it is almost like a commercial crop within the US South, where there are regularly rotations of the timber that is grown there, which is then harvested and replanted on a regular basis. Now, we do a lot of checks with the suppliers that we work with. We have a number of standards that we have to adhere to in terms of how we source our fiber. And we work very closely with those timberland owners as well to make sure they're adhering to practices around biodiversity, also about local employment, in supporting the local industry, et cetera, and the local communities, to make sure that we're having a positive impact. But with regards to kind of the forestry itself, we look for areas where the technical term is growth to drain ratio. We want to see that above one. So in essence, the forest continues to grow as we harvest it, more in addition to what has been taken is planted. So it is always increasing, the amount of forestry that's there. Now, we don't take all of the trees. We are part of a bigger process within forestry. So majority of timberland is grown for kind of saw logs or construction, which are high value items, which justify the investment for kind of 20 years of growth. But if you imagine the construction timber that you see, it's a lovely rectangular shape. In order to get a very nice long piece of timber, you actually have to go through quite a lot of process in terms of growing lots of small trees, thinning out the ones that are a bit wonky, have too many branches, and then all the way through to then at the sawmill when you're wanting to create that rectangular piece of lumber. Now, throughout that journey, there is a lot of waste wood that currently doesn't necessarily have a market to go to. And that is the material that Drax takes. So it supports other industries within the forestry sector by taking the material that is either not saleable in another industry or is a byproduct of a sawmill or something similar like that. But with regards to, you know, those forests that we take from, we make sure they have biodiversity plans in place. We make sure that it is being managed in a sustainable way to make sure it's not having a detrimental effect, which is we're quite passionate about at Drax, because without it, we can't run this business.
I mean, we are working towards net zero and decarbonizing our power systems, but at the end of the day, it has to be sustainable and protect biodiversity. I think what's interesting for me, Anne, is how you've described this. There's an entire BECCS ecosystem that you are working on and needs to be considered throughout this journey. It's fascinating because I can imagine that Drax is pioneering in this regard, and certainly setting standards for the industry, almost creating a project blueprint. Would you agree?
I would agree. And it's humbling to hear that you actually have kind of observed that and recognised that, because a lot of work has been done on that space. We do want to be responsible people within this space and set the standards and go above and beyond what's needed, because ultimately it is all part of the package. It starts with the trees at the beginning and goes all the way through to the carbon that's removed at the end. And if we don't have that nice kind of ecosystem in place where we're working with the forest, then we don't have a business model. So it is something that is very important to us. We do need to be able to stand up and stand behind the biomass that we use. And that's where standards are so important.
This is obviously not an inexpensive type of project, and I would assume that it comes with some challenges in that regard. So how are you learning about and overcoming some of these challenges, for example, around cost?
So you're absolutely right. These are not cheap projects to deploy for BECCS. With regards to our UK project, obviously we have our existing power station that runs on biomass. So the main investment there is the deployment of the carbon capture technology. I think part of that is educating people on the benefits that carbon capture and permanently storing CO2 underground brings. Touching briefly on the carbon credits market, which is what this project ultimately plays into, there is a whole spectrum of carbon credits that corporates can purchase. These are known as engineer credits, the ones that are produced by BECCS. They will have a permanence. So once they're stored underground, they will be stored underground, you know, for centuries, in essence. At the other end, you have nature-based solutions or similar, which are similar to kind of afforestation, etc. So by planting forests, you can gain credits because you're taking CO2 out of the atmosphere. However, as we've unfortunately seen in the likes of California along the west coast of the US, should you have forest fires because those forests aren't managed properly, all that CO2 is re-released into the atmosphere. And that therefore means the credit is no longer valid. On that spectrum, one of those carbon credits that you get from an afforestation project probably costs you a couple of dollars, versus when you come to the engineered removals aspect of it, we have all our carbon capture technology and then the cost of storing it underground to consider, which makes it a very expensive carbon credit relative to a nature-based solution carbon credit. So it is an expensive way of storing CO2 and creating a carbon credit. But what we hope to do is over time, as more of these facilities get built, we'll get kind of economies of scale, or we'll be able to get some kind of more formulaic approach to designing them. And also, we think the technology for capturing the carbon will be improved, which will also reduce down the costs. But at the moment, because we're at the beginning of the journey of capturing and storing carbon underground, it is quite an expensive process.
I have had conversations where people have actually said to me, look, it's costly, but the cost of not doing carbon capture and storage is actually more, if you look at the impact on the environment. So fascinating. And I want to talk to you about what Drax is doing in the US, because I've heard of some recent news announcements from across the pond, which are very exciting. So talk to me about some of the projects that you've got planned, or some of the strategic objectives for Drax in the US.
So we've got some exciting plans for the US. We've traditionally focused on the UK market for our power generation and then moving into BECCS with the carbon capture. But what we're looking to do is take that expertise that we've built within the UK and actually go and look at new markets. We've spent probably the last 3 years researching different areas across the globe to understand where BECCS is best placed. And we've actually landed on the US as a particularly strong market for this kind of technology. You've got a number of key components that you need to make BECCS successful. You need the sustainable forestry, which we've got. You need appropriate geological storage, which is in abundance along the Gulf Coast. And you need the right kind of policy in place, which we've got with the Inflation Reduction Act and 45Q. And that's all helped bring together the concept of BECCS within the US and makes it a very attractive place to deploy it. So we've been working quite hard on understanding where within the US would be most suitable for deploying our first BECCS plant. And what we've considered is actually the US South is probably the strongest place at this point in time because of the policy support, the geological storage, and the fibre availability on the doorstep. So we've begun this journey predominantly based from the UK, especially during COVID when we couldn't travel. But now we're back to kind of full strength and we've started our discussions with US companies that we would like to work with. We've recently announced that we're creating a new carbon removal company at Drax, which will be headquartered in Houston, Texas. And we have a new president that will be heading up that organization. And she will be driving forward the growth of our US business as we look to deploy our first BECCS plant within the US South.
That sounds very exciting indeed. And there were two other announcements I wanted to touch on, specifically the agreement with C0, as well as with CarbonX. Tell me and our listeners a little bit about that.
So a key part of developing this BECCS project is obviously the sale of the carbon dioxide removal credits that are produced as a result of the technology. We've been working very hard within the industry of carbon dioxide removals to educate people on BECCS and also talk them through that story in terms of the value of an engineered removal versus a nature-based or less permanent solution. The two announcements that you referenced there are very exciting news for us because it really starts to build the momentum around carbon dioxide removal announcements. When you look at corporates today, the majority of them have sustainability targets that they need to hit in the next 5, 10, 15 years in terms of reducing their carbon footprint, improving their sustainability criteria, et cetera. And at the moment, there isn't necessarily a route for companies to be able to do that. So we've been working really hard with a number of international organizations to help make them aware of what BECCS can bring them. And these announcements of CarbonX and C0 are really the first in what we think will be many announcements we make on carbon credits that we have got commitments for maybe 5-10 years that will help those organizations to decarbonize.
And I wanted to touch briefly on your career path and experience. How is it that you became an engineer and ended up working for Drax? Talk us through that. Was this something you always wanted to do?
So I naturally started with numbers by being a civil engineer at university. And I've very much been on a journey ever since, and I'm very keen and open to learning new things. Early on in my career, I became very interested in the energy sector and particularly renewable energy. I think it's a fascinating space and it is going to be the key to us hitting some of these very important climate goals that we have in the world today. I've looked at all the different technologies across renewables and done some consulting work along the way. But the opportunity at Drax to be able to do something at the scale that we do and produce dispatchable renewable power is something that's very exciting. I use all the skills that I've brought to Drax on a daily basis in terms of the engineering piece when talking about the design of the plant. I've done quite a lot of work in communications as well and educating people on what BECCS is and listening to stakeholders and what's important to them has been absolutely critical. And then the third piece of my kind of journey to doing this today, I think, is really just having that enthusiasm for renewable energy and wanting to make a positive difference to the world today.
I did notice your experience in communications, and I did want to touch on that because I think, you know, when it comes to a technology like BECCS as well, you really have to have a strong message because you're changing mindsets and, you know, perhaps a culture within the industry, which is no small feat. How important is it to have that messaging and effective stakeholder engagement to push these strategies forward?
Oh, I think it is absolutely key to making progress. When you meet people for the first time and you start to talk about BECCS, and it's likely to be something that no one has ever come to talk to them about, especially within the US, you really need to gauge what are the key components that this person is interested in. And it will vary from stakeholder to stakeholder. So during my journey of the last kind of 2 years of going to talk to politicians, utilities, carbon storage operators, end power users, carbon credit people, each of them has a different area that they are most interested in this project. In some parts of the US, climate change is not a big issue for them. What's more important to them is actually about having 24/7 reliable power onto their power grid, because they're currently having rolling blackouts at particular peak periods. They want low cost, reliable power. That's what is important to them. And when you start to talk about BECCS, you can tell them the story of the fact that we source the fuel locally, we have it on site next to the power station. So should there be a big freeze or something similar, the power station keeps running. We keep going when potentially gas will struggle. We then can talk about the fact that ordinarily, a biomass power plant would be quite expensive from a power perspective in the US market versus the lower cost of gas. However, because we're capturing the carbon, we have two revenue streams within this facility, which helps us keep cost competitive when it comes to the power price, which helps local communities in terms of ensuring they're getting reliable, cost-effective power. And then you talk to the big corporates. They are most interested in, can we have green power to power our facilities to help us reduce our emissions? And then can you help us actually go further by selling us carbon credits or similar, which solve some of the problem they currently have as to how they're going to meet those sustainability targets? So communication is really important throughout this journey. And I guess the last one to touch on, which is probably the most important one, is when talking to politicians on this, they think that's all very interesting in terms of the green power and the carbon credits, etc. But actually, if we're going to create jobs at a power station that potentially is quite rural, and we're going to help support that forestry industry as well, which is currently struggling sometimes with the decline of pulp and paper, we're going to secure jobs within their area and help them with some of their campaign slogans, especially when you're coming up to an election. So it's really using communication to find the right messages for the right audience.
That makes perfect sense. And thank you for talking us through that. Do you have any final comments or thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think I'd really like to leave people with the thought about the potential that BECCS has to make a fundamental difference to our power grids and also our climate. It has the opportunity to help bring renewable energy 24/7 to power grids to help decarbonize. It helps to support our forests, and it also helps to remove CO2 from the atmosphere whilst also providing that benefit of the renewable power. For me, I'm very excited about this technology and the deployment of it, not only within the UK and internationally. And I'd like to hope that when we come back and have another conversation, having a few years' time, we can potentially be pointing to some pictures of some BECCS plants that are up and running in either in the UK or the US. So I think from my perspective, it brings a lot of benefits that we've covered today. And I hope this kind of discussion has piqued people's interest to find out a bit more about BECCS and what it can bring.
Well, for myself, it's fascinating. It's a very exciting space, and I look forward to our future conversation where we do take a look back at the journey and how far you've come. So, Anne, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. Until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.